Hi there, and welcome to The Conscious Communicator, a show dedicated to helping you find your true voice, the nonviolent voice of personal responsibility and purpose, the voice that only you can speak. The reason that most of us fail to achieve our true voice is because of the false voices that occupy the mind. The voices of ego, consumption, expectation, opinion, and self-doubt rob us of our true nature, our true voice. Join me as we have a chat about inner purpose, outer passion, and finding your true voice. Hey everybody, welcome back to The Conscious Communicator. I hope you had a wonderful week. I want to thank Jimmy Robinson for being with us last week. Had a nice chat with him about his work, and obviously jimmyrobinson.com is a place where you can visit him. If you ever feel the need to find out more about his poetry, his books are absolutely beautiful, by the way, if you get a chance to check them out, though. The pictures and the stuff that they put in there are absolutely gorgeous. They're really fun to look at. So, and also, you can always join us, 888-228-4494 in the U.S. and Canada, toll-free 877-489-6350 worldwide. We had a guest scheduled for you tonight, but unfortunately, at the last minute, they had something else come up. So it's going to be you and I. So if you get a chance to call in, I would love to talk to you. Kind of find out what's going on with you, talk to you about your communication issues, the things that are interesting in your world. 888-228-4494 in the U.S. and Canada, toll-free 877-489-6350 worldwide. Tonight we're talking about forgiveness. We talked a little bit about it last week with Jimmy. Didn't get very far into it. Jimmy didn't seem to have much to say in that area, so I was going to look at forgiveness, also talk a little bit about resiliency. Been doing some work on resiliency with children and what works in them, and the lady that was going to meet with us tonight was an expert in child development, and so we were going to talk about resiliency with her, but since she's not here, may go back and pick up on the forgiveness piece for a little bit. When I think about forgiveness, the first thing that pops into my mind for me is a meeting that I had, oh, I guess about 2 weeks ago, with Brian Martin, who, for some of you, you might have heard him on the show. He was on, I think, the second week that I've been on the air. And is a mentor and a friend and a business person, somebody that I've worked a lot with. And we were talking about going forward and continuing on in our business relationship and also thinking about the next steps for me as a public speaker, professional speaker. And I had just started doing my seminars, going out and getting into schools and talking to kids about the stuff that I do. School tools is one of the topics that I talk about, and it's basically a social skills curriculum for elementary school kids. And it's something I've been thinking about doing pretty much for as far back as I can remember in terms of professionally. I've always wanted to be a professional speaker. I wanted to be paid to go out there and do something that I was good at, something I loved to do, and I was starting to do it, and I had worked to position myself to do it. And part of that was I was working 2 days a week for Brian and his company, teaching classes in domestic violence and child endangerment, and the other 3 days a week was kind of my opportunity to be creative and go out there and see if I could build something for myself. As it turned out, things were starting to come up, and I was getting opportunities to speak, and I had already spoken once, and Brian and I started to talk about it, and the thing that came up was that this was something that I really wanted to do, and Brian was asking me why I wasn't pursuing it full-time instead of thinking about doing anything else with him, and the answer that came to me when I was talking to him, and obviously he's a counselor, which is a good place to have these conversations, was that at some level I didn't think I deserved it. You know, it was like, it was almost like I couldn't allow myself to be happy and to do exactly what I wanted to do. And I found that fascinating. And there's so many people out there with their self-help books and their, you know, think and grow rich mentality, and they think that it's that easy just to turn off what I believe to be years and years and years of negative subconscious self-talk, which sets a thermostat inside of each one of us that really limits our ability to be successful. If you think about a thermostat, if it gets too hot in a room, the air conditioner comes on. If it gets too cold in the room, the heat comes on. The same is true, I believe, in each one of us. We each have a thermostat inside of us. And that thermostat is set where we think we belong. Where our negative self-talk or our self-fulfilling prophecies or our past or our experience have set a watermark for our existence. Now, in some ways, that can be good. For example, you see yourself as a husband or as a wife. You see yourself as a father or as a mother. And those are watermarks that you want to maintain, obviously, because those relationships are incredibly important. But the fact of the matter is that it also applies to us in pretty much every other area of our life as well. Socially, what's the watermark if you're sitting there listening to me right now? If you think about yourself socially, what is your watermark? Well, for me, for example, I'm very comfortable in social situations if I have something to talk about. If I'm in a situation where the meetings or the introductions are very easy. Say, for example, I'm doing a presentation and I can talk in front of a room full of people, and then afterwards it's very easy for me to talk to these people. It's very easy for me in my bartending business to be gregarious when I'm behind the bar. There's a reason for me to talk to these people. There's a reason for them to talk to me. If, on the other hand, I'm going out on a Saturday night into a restaurant where I don't know anybody and I walk into the bar, I may try and strike up the conversation with a bartender because I understand that from my perspective that's sort of kind of what we have to do is talk to the patrons. But my ability to talk to random strangers, at least the watermark that I've set for myself, is very low. I don't have that kind of courage. I don't go up to random people and try and elicit conversation. Although I know myself in other social situations to be an incredibly gifted conversationalist. I like to listen to people. I like to communicate. And I'm very effective in those arenas. Something about the randomness of it, something about where I've set the mark for myself when it comes to people that I don't know or people that I don't have some pre-established relationship with, I set that watermark or that thermostat level very low. I don't see myself as the kind of guy who walks up to women in a bar and just starts having a conversation. That's random to me, but that's the watermark that I've set for myself. Obviously, we all know people who have completely different thermostats or internal temperatures when it comes to those kinds of situations. They'll walk up to anybody and do it. The same is true professionally. You can think about it yourself. Where is the professional mark that you've drawn for yourself? I am this. This is what I am capable of doing. And nothing more. Now, some of that may be laziness, but I think a lot of it for us is the fear of going out and trying to do something that we might fail at. You know, I was talking to Brian about this issue with me. It was interesting that I was thinking to myself, if this doesn't work, I've put so much effort and energy into this particular idea, then what? You know, putting that kind of pressure on myself, again, subconsciously, even though I consider myself to be somebody who thinks quite a bit about what's going on inside of my head and tries to make sense of it and so forth, there's obviously still a very, very real subconscious current of information that I need to figure out how to bring to a conscious level to begin to understand some of these things that are sabotaging me as I go forward. Not to say that I'm not having success, not to say that I'm not moving forward. It's just a matter of, well, I don't know what it's a matter of. Actually, that's interesting. I don't know. Maybe I think I should be moving faster. I think I should be, you know, going farther or pushing harder, whatever it is. But again, these ideas a lot of times don't belong to me. They belong to somebody else, other voices from my past that tell me that I have to work harder than everybody else, that I have to push harder than everybody else. And I'm not sure that's the case. You know, it's interesting to think about the fact that in my particular field as a professional speaker, you can go out and work for a very short period of time and make a considerable amount of money. And I'm signed up to do a presentation in December that will be basically an hour-long presentation, and I'm going to be paid $1,000 to do it. Now, for a lot of people, that's 2 weeks, 3 weeks, almost a month's worth of income that you can accomplish in 1 hour. Well, part of me says to myself, you're not working hard enough. And what about the other 39 hours in the week? What about all the other things that you should be doing? Should. And that's that negative self-talk that comes into play. What I should be doing in those other 39 hours are the things that I've set myself up to do, which is enjoy my friends and family, enjoy my hobbies, and do the things that I enjoy doing, to find other ways to market myself and my ideas, to come on BBS Radio and talk to you on Sunday evenings. These are all things that are important to me, but because I don't make money doing them, because I'm not paid for them, at some level there's some voice in my head that says, well, obviously that's just fun stuff. That stuff you're just doing to keep yourself occupied. There's really no value to it. And so much of what we've done in this country is put value to money. Look at the bailout, $700 billion bailout. That's more money than we will spend this year on every single form of education, city, state, county, federal, in the entire country for 1 year, to bail out basically, and I know there were some examples where people obviously were tricked and people went into it with good intentions and so forth, but basically a lot of this debt was second mortgage financing where people went out and borrowed this money so they could buy a boat or buy a car or buy something that they wanted. The Americans' inability to control spending is part of this problem. But it's also part of the problem is that we put so much value on money as an indicator not only of success but of time well spent. That must have been time well spent. You made money doing it. How much money did you make last year? Well, obviously you had a good year. Judging an entire year by the financial ramifications of that year. Not thinking about the impact it had on your family, not thinking about the impact it had on your body, not thinking about the impact that it had on the people that you came in contact with. We judge it based on the financial aspect of it, the toys. You must be very successful because you have all these toys. Or you must be very successful because you work so hard. I remember the old luxury car commercials where the person looking out their window and it's either first thing in the morning or you know, pitch black at night, and they can see their luxury automobile as the last car in the parking lot, in some way saying, you know, you deserve this luxury automobile because you spend 14, 15, 16 hours a day at the office. Well, that's fine if you're like me and you've got no family or children or wife to go home to. But if you have those other things, what is all the money for? And if you ask the person, they'll tell you, well, I'm doing it for my family. I'm doing it to protect my family. I'm doing it to give my family the future. Most of my indications from the kids that I work with in the schools, the number one thing that they want from their parents is their time and attention. They don't start thinking about money until parents start parenting with money. They don't even think twice about it. They want to spend time with dad. They want to spend time with mom. They want to read a book. They want to ride a bike. I was up in Bidwell Park hiking Jake today. Bidwell Park is like the downtown park of Chico, California. And I saw this guy and his little kid riding mountain bikes together. And you could just see in the kid's face. I mean, there was nothing in the world that could have been better at that particular moment than that child spending quality time with their father. And I just loved it. It was a beautiful thing, a beautiful moment. But getting back to my story about Brian, it was interesting to me as he's sitting there talking to me, and he's saying, why can't you allow yourself to do this? Why can't you let go and just accept the fact that this is who you are? Accept the fact that you're able to, because of your path and the choices that you've made, you're able to go out and do, you know, things that make impact on other people, that have an effect on other people, and do it in a way that allows you to earn income. And I'm not a money person. I live in a very small house in the middle of basically nowhere in Chico, California, that I rent for $450 a month. I have no expenses. I have no debt. I don't need a lot of money. I'm in the process of moving back to San Francisco, so that'll probably change relatively quickly. But at the same time, living in a city like San Francisco is not expensive. Unless you're planning on eating out every night, you know, unless you're planning on buying a house in the middle of some, well, buying a house period, you know, driving back and forth to work and doing those kinds of things. But in my situation, I can actually make a life for myself in that city very, very comfortably by just doing the things that I love to do. But at some level, I wasn't allowing myself to have that. At some level, I wasn't allowing myself to be happy. And going back to that literature on Think and Grow Rich and dream your future. If you can dream it, you can be it, this, that, and the other. What about the thermostat? What about that thing that jumps up and bites you in the ass right before you become successful? Or as soon as you start to become successful, continues to hound you in that Chicken Little mentality that says the sky is falling down. How are we going to get over that? How do we retrain that part of our brain? A number of the guys that I work with in the domestic violence arena, they're in my classes for 12 months on parole and probation for most of that period of time, all that period of time. A lot of them end up spinning out and making mistakes in the last month of the class or in the last month of their parole or probation. And the statistical research on that is pretty specific. Now, it might have some contributing factors, being that maybe in the last month, the parole and probation officers are more adamant about going out and checking or doing the kinds of things that they need to do in order to bust somebody. And maybe these guys have been doing it all along. But imagine if you had the opportunity, say you were on parole or probation for 3 years, and you knew that all you had to do was, for 1 month, just keep it clean, not do anything. Keep your nose clean, no beer or wine in the house, nothing that's going to get you in trouble. Do you think you could pull it off? Most of you sitting out there would probably say, yeah, it wouldn't be a problem. That would be very easy for me to do. But how many of my guys end up spinning out in that period of time? In some way, I believe they have a thermostat. They have a preconceived idea of who they are, and when they start to achieve some success, when they start to achieve some forward-moving direction, they find a way to sabotage themselves. And some of the stories are unbelievable. You know, guys who will go out and, on their last night will get a DUI, not a DUI, but a drunk in public. So not only did they get drunk, but they would walk around in the neighborhood. One guy was telling me that he was found basically buck naked walking around his neighborhood after drinking a half a pint of Jack Daniels. These are people who at some subconscious level have told themselves that you are not capable of happiness. You're not capable of freedom. You're not capable of taking the next step along the road to self-discovery. And I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen in my classes. And again, the research on the parole and probation violations are very specific. So what's going on there? Is it possible that we have some sort of a governor device inside of our head? That we have some thermostat? That something inside of us is telling us that we're not capable or we're not worthy? I don't know. I think in my case it was true. And part of the thing that I have to go through is I have to deal with getting through and learning how to forgive myself. To forgive myself for some of the things that I've done in the past. Some of the mistakes that I've made. Some of the decisions that I've made. We're talking about forgiveness tonight. And again, you can join us at any time at 888-228-4494 in the U.S. or Canada. Or toll free at 877-489-6350. I would so love to have somebody join the conversation with us tonight. We're talking about forgiveness. And for most of us, the number one person that we need to forgive is ourselves. A lot of times as young children, people say things to us or tell us things about ourselves. And whether or not we realize that, we start to incorporate those ideas into our sense of who we are. We begin to agree. I tell my kids all the time, the bully only wins when you agree. When you agree with them and let them know or start to believe what they say, then the bully wins. But the truth is also the same for somebody who's been abusive. Say, for example, you grew up in an abusive household, someone that was beating you mentally or physically. And over that period of time, they told you more than once that you were a loser, that you were never going to amount to anything. That you were going to turn out just like the rest of your family, or like your no good father, or like this, or like that, whatever it happens to be. And you swear you'll never be that person. You swear you'll never turn out like that. How many of you out there today who are old enough to realize that even though you swore you would never repeat the sins of the past, how many of you have repeated the cycle, whatever it happens to be? Well, I would certainly include myself in that. I was raised by a father who was emotionally volatile. He was incredibly angry during periods of time and then would also emotionally shut off from other people when he was uncomfortable. And I wanted to be the emotionally open one. I wanted to be the one who would talk to people when I had problems. I wanted to be the one who tried to communicate. I'm the conscious communicator. But I found out, without an incredible amount of effort, that I was becoming very much like my father. In my marriage that lasted all of 2.5 years, I fought like crazy. I mean, I was yelling constantly. I was scared. I was lonely. I was upset. And I couldn't figure out how to communicate myself. One of the reasons that I'm involved in this field right now is that very situation. So I don't look back on it with regret from that perspective, but at some level, I've never forgiven myself for that. You know, it's been 7 years since the divorce was finalized, and to this day, I've done very little in the way of dating or participating in real relationships. I had a very good relationship for a period of time, which kind of turned into a friendship, which kind of turned into a bunch of different things. But the majority of my time has been spent on the sidelines. Why? Because I have been judging myself and refusing to forgive myself for the mistakes that I made in the past, the mistakes of my marriage. Was I perfect in my marriage? Absolutely not. Do I deserve that level of consternation? Do I deserve that level of now that I am past that situation, do I deserve to be able to go out and look for something different? I don't know. I mean, that's my question to you tonight. Is it okay to forgive yourself? Is it okay at some point to say, yeah, I made mistakes. I did things I wished I hadn't done. Drugs and alcohol were a big part of that particular period of time in my life as well. Is that something I'm proud of? Absolutely not. But it's also something that I had to overcome and I have to work through on a daily basis to continue to find ways of being honest with myself that allow me basically what I'm looking for, and I don't think it's asking too much, is just a little peace and happiness. It was interesting reading the other day, John Lennon's son has released a book about how violent his father was towards him, and I guess, you know, of course, memory always is interesting. And, I don't remember my father being particularly violent towards us. I mean, he did what most fathers in that period of time did in terms of hitting you with a belt if you were in trouble or yelling at you and so forth. But apparently John Lennon had a huge problem with that, which I find interesting because this is a man who spent his entire career talking about peace, love, and all the other beautiful things in the world, and yet in his own personal relationships, he was struggling to make that a reality, which I find fascinating. It's not to put him down, obviously, it's just simply to say that I think for most of us, we can talk a good game, we can go out there and say to the world and to everybody around us that, you know, hey, we're trying really hard to make this happen, or to be exactly who we want to be. But the reality is that there's something inside of us that's sticking. There's something inside of us that's still that little 5-year-old child who's being yelled at or being hit, who's still concerned about the opinion of others, who can't for some reason let themselves be successful and let themselves have the victory. And so forgiveness is a huge part of conscious communication. There's multiple benefits to forgiveness. Any of you that are out there right now that are holding a grudge or who have something that they haven't forgiven somebody for, what that usually causes on a very conscious level, if you're aware of it, is it causes high blood pressure, stress. It causes all kinds of negative things to happen. But the research has found that people who forgive And forgiving, obviously, is not to forget, but it's to let go of the power that that person has over you. The way that you continue to think about the event and the way that event continues to structure and organize your life. It's kind of like gravity. You know, the Earth is in the gravitational rotation of the Sun. And the Sun, at some level, continues to play a major role in the Earth. Now, in order for the Earth to move past or move away from that, obviously in this example, we wouldn't want that to happen because the rest of us would freeze to death and the Earth would die. But if it were to break free of that, to forgive it would be to break free of that gravitational pull, need to break free of that force that's having an impact on the life going forward. Forgiveness is the breaking free of that. I will ask the question, I've asked this 100 times in 100 different situations, how does the child who is sexually abused and who feels that pain and that degradation turn out in 60 to 65% of the cases to abuse a child as an adult? Obviously something has happened, something, they haven't let go of something. In some way, they have become the monster which they hated so much. And you ask that child, anywhere along the path, is it your, would you ever abuse a child? Oh, hell no. I mean, they might fight you if you'd ask them that question. And then somehow we find, in 60 to 65% of the cases, that significant sex offenders, for the most part, were also abused as children. What happened? Well, in my opinion, something has disconnected. It may also be that these people are locked in a period of time. The forgiveness factor may also be an opportunity to move forward in time. We talk about time travel. And time travel in terms of, and our guest next week has a lot to say about time travel, Sonia Bennett. Time travel, in my opinion, is the ability to travel from what has happened in the past into the present moment. To forget the abuse of the past, to forget what's happened to it, not to forget, but to forgive it and let go of it, to move out of its gravitational pull. You can imagine a lifeline that moves on in 80, 90 years long, and if that lifeline at somewhere along the way gets caught in some sort of a relationship or failure or abusive sort of a vortex, and that lifeline, instead of going forward, if you can imagine, your head just begins to revolve around that particular event. So instead of the life actually moving forward and living a full 80 years, they might only live to be 13. They might only live to be 25. They might only live to the date of the event of the negative thing that happened to them. After that, they rotate around that for the rest of their lives. They become a victim. The victim mentality that we talk so much about, and it happens so much in multi-generational dysfunction. I was a victim of this, my mom did this, my dad did this, therefore F you and everything that you stand for, and I'm going to take my pound of flesh, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to quit, or I'm not going to go to school, or I'm not going to try, blah, 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 blah. And they end up on the social system. Or they end up pregnant. Or they end up quitting or giving up. Well, you know why? Because they haven't evolved past the moment of the realization of the trauma, which for most kids is that 12 or 13-year-old period of time. They move into adolescence, they move into puberty, they move into the amygdala part of the brain. They realize the pain and suffering associated with what's happened to them. And because that pain and suffering in an individual experience feels so personal and real and individual that they hold on to it, they make it their own, and the rest of their life is determined by what happened to them in a moment of time. In one moment of time, the rest of their life is determined. How can you tell me that that's not a thermostat? How can you tell me that that's not in some way, shape, or form a subconscious refusal to move forward? A subconscious setting of a bar And moving past that bar or moving through that bar is something that takes, I think, huge personal attention and conviction, honesty, and all the things that we talk about here on the Conscious Communicator. But number one, it takes forgiveness. And so we need to figure out what are those things that we need to forgive. Why do we hold grudges and become resentful or unforgiving? The people that most likely to hurt us are those closest to us. Our partners, friends, brothers and sisters, parents. When we're hurt by somebody we love and trust, whether it's a lie, a betrayal, rejection, it can be extremely difficult to overcome. And even minor offenses can turn into huge conflicts. We've all seen that in our families. You get to a situation with somebody and you start having problems and they start getting worse and worse. When you experience hurt or harm from somebody's actions or words, whether this is intended or not, you may begin experiencing negative feelings such as anger, confusion, sadness, especially when it's somebody close to you. Obviously, in the case of abuse, obviously in the case of sexual or physical abuse, or in the case of a dysfunctional family, those feelings begin as even bigger feelings than these other ones. As these feelings may start out small, but if you don't deal with them, they can become bigger and more powerful. They may even begin to crowd out positive feelings. And you begin to get your life is filled with resentment, vengeance, hostility that takes root inside of you because of that event or that hurtful situation. And we keep it alive by replaying it over and over and over in our mind. How many of you have a recurring theme in your life? If you're aware of your conscious voice, if you're aware of the conscious aspect of your mentality, of your thinking mind, of your thinking daily basis, what is a thought that recurs over and over again in your daily experience? What is something that you judge yourself about? Me, for example, I'm a hypochondriac. There's always something that I'm dying of. There's always something that's making me ill or something that I'm thinking about. And it usually, excuse me, that's the cold that's going to ultimately kill me. Usually it's something that lasts for a long period of time. I can remember in my 20s it was something in my lower back. I had back pain forever. Now, although I went to a chiropractor and had an MRI and had all these things happen, none of it actually turned out that I had anything wrong with me. It was just pain. And I think in a lot of ways pain has to do with unresolved issues, but it also probably has to do with the fact that our bodies are, in a lot of ways, as we grow and change and so forth, our bodies get older, pain becomes somewhat of a, more of a reality that we have to deal with on a regular basis. But I can remember waking up every morning and thinking about things and thinking about the same things over again. I did too much of this or I didn't do enough of that. And just day after day after day being in the same place, in the same space, in the same thoughts. Not that I was doing much about it, but I was thinking about it. And by thinking about those hurtful and harmful situations and replaying them in my mind over and over again, I was allowing them to take hold. I was allowing them to set roots in my brain, in my experience. When you think about things and you create cognitive pathways in your brain, it's basically like scratching, you can imagine if any of you are old enough to remember, the surface of a record. The old record, which relied on a needle to play around the outside of a record, and the music and so forth were in those grooves and those undulations on the record, which were things that we couldn't really see, but you could see the groove. The same is true in brain chemistry. Long-term thinking patterns, long-term addiction patterns, long-term habits are formed by connecting the dots. Any of you out there that know a smoker, when do smokers more than any other time usually light up a cigarette? My experience of that is when they are either stressed out or after they've eaten a meal. And so what they've connected is they have this real neural pathway, which is a deep groove in their brain that says, when I'm stressed out, light a cigarette, or after you eat, light a cigarette. And they've connected those two dots. Now, there's nothing naturally that says that those two dots need to be connected, but that's what's happened by years and years of thinking and repeating a pattern. And the same is true with any negative event. a negative event in our life experience, as we continue to think about it and resonate on it and continue to think about all the things that happened to us and why they happened and what we could have done different and why it shouldn't have happened and this, that, and the other, instead of really working through those issues, which we're not doing, what we're doing is we're creating a connection. We're creating a belief that we are, in fact, that person of that was abused. We are the abused person. We are the person that's divorced. We are the person who failed. We are the person who did this or did that. We're no longer an evolving, growing, changing individual. We are that person, locked in time, locked in the past. And forgiveness is a part of getting out of that. Forgiveness is a part of letting go of those old grudges and pains and bitterness and even hatred that we have towards other people, even if they did abuse you. You know, even if there was abuse in your life and there was somebody who treated you incredibly poorly, fine. If you hate them, I mean, I've said this before, the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is indifference. And forgiveness is indifference. It's not to say I'm going to invite you over to my house and allow you to do it to me again. It's that I've let go of all feelings, positively or negatively, for that other person. I have completely freed myself of any emotional involvement in the other person or in that event in time. And that's what forgiveness is. It's not to say, oh, you know, by the way, man, I accept what you did. It was a mistake, or, you know, you shouldn't have done this, or I understand you growing up. Screw that. You know, if somebody did something to you that you don't appreciate, you don't have to understand it. You don't have to try and internalize why they did it. You don't have to come up with an explanation. I remember when I was in high school, I was walking to the bathroom at a high school dance. And a new kid had come to our school, and the kid was somewhat popular as he had gotten to school because he was new, and as often happens, the new kids tend to be the talk of the school for the first few days that they're there. And me and all my self-esteem issues and all my problems and bullying and so forth, as I was walking to this bathroom and the kid's walking towards me, I punched him in the face. For absolutely no reason whatsoever. And whether or not that kid has ever forgiven me, he does not need to understand why I did it. He does not need to come to me and go, you know, I understand, Rusty, you might have been a little bit overwhelmed, that I might have been more popular than you, or maybe your girlfriend looked at me, I can understand. What is, whatever. But my hope is that that kid doesn't remember to this day, and in some way, shape, or form, allow that to affect his life. Although, by me telling that story, I may be admitting that in some ways it still haunts me. In some ways it still haunts me that I had that ability to, you know, to basically be that big of a dick. And that strikes me as interesting. So part of the path, obviously for us too, is to forgive ourselves for the mistakes that we made. And to forgive ourselves for the things that we've done. When do you know it's time to forgive? When do you know it's time to really get over something? Well, it starts with when you're dwelling on events and you're dwelling on things and you're constantly dwelling on those particular issues. If there's something inside of you that you think about on a regular basis that has to do with something from your past, something that is still wearing on you, something that your mom said or something that your dad did or something that... It's time to let it go. You know, especially if it happened 10, 20, 30 years ago. Even if it happened a year ago, 10 months ago, 5 days ago. It's time to let it go. The more we hold on to it, the more we keep it alive. And it's kind of like having, you know, have you ever had a canker sore in your mouth or like you've got like a something like on your tongue and it hurts every time you rub it against your teeth and you can just continue to do it? Because even though you know it hurts when you do that, in some way, shape, or form, it's like you know that you can control that amount of pain. You know, we talk about cutters. People in school, have you ever seen, I don't know if you're aware of cutters, but a lot of young people, and oftentimes it's young women, they will use razor blades or knives or whatever, and they will make small incisions in the skin, usually on their arms or on their legs. They will cut themselves. They will make very real cuts in their body. And the research on that predicts that what they're doing is, in some way, shape, or form, they are controlling the pain. They are able to control the amount of pain in a world that to them seems uncontrollable. to deal with a pain that's outside of their ability to deal with. For example, parents going through divorce or trying to understand their own sexuality or whatever issue it is. If they can't deal with that on a conscious level, they will control the pain by cutting themselves. So the same is true with these kinds of things when it comes to forgiveness and embracing forgiveness. In order for us to embrace it, we have to realize we're going to have to let go of that pain. We're going to have to let go of that kind of control. We know what that pain is. We know where it comes from. We obviously have justified ourselves in it. We realize that something happened to us that shouldn't have. And we've taken solace in that. We've almost established that as a way of saying to ourselves, well, here's a pain I'm comfortable with. I understand this pain. I know how it works. And therefore, I'm comfortable. So I am always going to be the son of an alcoholic, the daughter of a drug addict. I'm always going to be this because that justifies who I am today. And that also allows me to not move forward. That allows me to say to the rest of the world, well, screw you. You know, I don't have to change. I don't have to be different. You know why? I'm the son of an alcoholic. I'm the daughter of a drug addict. You know, I met a girl when I was in elementary school counseling. She was in, I think, fifth grade when we started working together. And she had been sexually abused since second grade. So she had been sexually abused almost every day by a neighbor who was watching her for almost 2 years. In my mind, that is something that is unbelievably challenging. But I also realize at some level cognitively that in order for that life to continue, in order for that individual not to continue to dominate the existence of that young girl has to forgive and let go of that experience. Yeah, I said that. That girl has to forgive and let go of that experience. In order for her to establish a life trajectory that's not completely and totally circular in nature, which revolves around the fact, because who would blame her? You walk into a room, you know, you're a homeless, you're a welfare mom, you're drug addicted, you've got 3 kids, you're completely screwed up, and they ask you why, and you tell them, well, you know what, I was abused for 2 years in second grade, from second to fourth grade by a guy I totally respected, and he told me that if I said anything, he'd kill me or my parents, or whatever, and so that was just too traumatic, and I could never get over it, and therefore I decided to do this. Who would blame you? You know, everybody go, oh, wow, that's a much better story than I have. You know, I started smoking pot in high school, and next thing you know, got involved in meth, and then I was doing some crazy shit, and now I'm just trying to get off of it. But, you know, this is a person that's got a legitimate, you know, here's a real thing that happened to me. I mean, most of us would sit there and say, I was doing a meeting last week for teachers, and I was telling them, one of the things you need to do is stop feeling sorry for the kids who have had something traumatic happen to them, because they rely on it. They rely on the fact that you're going to feel sorry for them and temper your behavior towards them because of their perceived problems and their challenges that they've faced. Is it horrible that that happened to her? Absolutely. That's the most horrific thing you could possibly have happen probably to a person of that particular age group. Is it something that you want to have manage the rest of your life? Is it, do you want that to be the defining event of who you are for the rest of your life? Is that what you're looking to do? Is that who you're looking to be? I am this. I say most of us, the answer is no. But most of us don't know how to break through. Most of us don't know how to start the process. We don't know what's going to happen if we forgive somebody. We maybe have a hard time forgiving because what we want is some sort of an apology. I can remember writing my father a letter when I was working in a recovery facility, and one of the ideas that they had was all the guys could write a letter to somebody who had hurt them in the past, and they could state the things that they had done to them, and as a way of just saying, I understand that this happened, and I forgive you for this, and I want to move on in our relationship or whatever. Well, I made a decision to write one of those letters, and I wrote that letter, and I stated all the things that I had thought was wrong with me and the person that I had had this relationship with. And that person took the time, with a red pen and all, to write back to me or send me back the original letter with their red-penned comments as to why I was completely wrong in each one of the situations and each one of the times that I had talked about the challenges that I had noticed in our relationship. They took the time to sit down and tell me again, to repeat to me that I was completely and totally wrong. Forgiveness has nothing to do with the other person accepting the fact that you, in some way, shape, or form, were harmed. That's not part of it. They may never accept the fact. They may just say it to you till the day that they die. You know what? You had it coming. That's how I was. You don't understand my generation. That's how I was raised. Blah, blah, blah. And that's okay. What we're not looking for acceptance. We're not looking for them to understand and validate and justify our pain. What we're looking for is to get rid of our pain. What we're looking for is to give it life, to give it wings, to send it on its way. And it's helpful if we think about all the times that we've hurt other people. I can't imagine how many times I've allowed my righteous indignation and my anger to destroy relationships, friendships, because I thought I was justified. Because they didn't know what it was like to be me. Because they had no idea what it was like to grow up the way that I grew up. And therefore it was completely and totally justified for me to make those kinds of comments and say the things that I've said. I didn't do that consciously, but I guarantee you I did it at some level because I was justified. Hey, you know what? Get used to it. This is the way I was treated. What's wrong with this? What's wrong with people talking to you like this? I can remember being in seventh grade basketball. I was coaching basketball, and I can remember yelling at a group of seventh grade girls, and I was yelling at them. I mean, I have a temper. And I was yelling at them about something, this, that, and the other. And I can remember walking out of that gym, and I'm thinking to myself, where in my life does anybody yell at me? No, there's nowhere. Nowhere in my life does anybody yell at me. So where was that yelling coming from? Well, that was coming from my childhood. You know, I was raised in an environment of where there was a lot of yelling and anger and so forth. And so I was just giving them a little dose of what I grew up with. I was just letting them know what it was like to be me. Most angry people are that way. I mean, we don't forgive the past. We don't forgive the fact that your mom was this or your dad was that. We just turn into them. And then all of a sudden along the way we justify it by saying, well, you don't know what my parents were like. You don't know how hard I had it. And we try and justify it. But forgiveness isn't about somebody accepting us or accepting that they did wrong. And it doesn't guarantee that there's going to be reconciliation. And I talked about my divorce. My divorce was finalized in 2001. It's May of 2001. So, you know, it's been almost 7 years since that period of time. And my exes told me the day of that divorce that she would never speak to me again. And she hasn't. She's never talked to me, and I've never tried to reach her. At some level, I think that I would like to let that go. And I would also like at some level to have a chance to talk to her once again. But that may never happen. But the important thing for me is to let it go so that I can move on with my life, so that I can get back involved in the dating and the natural flow of being a particular person in society. Do you have to interact with the person who hurt you if they don't want to talk to you? The answer is no. In order for you to accomplish forgiveness, you don't have to get contact with that person. It's not important. A lot of those letters that I talked about that we asked the guys to write, we never sent those letters. They were either to parents who had passed on or to people that they knew weren't in the space where they could hear what they had to say. The important part was to write the letter. And I will offer to you tonight, if there's something that you need to forgive, write a letter to the person that hurt you. Don't send it, but write it. Sit down and write and mark it down on a piece of paper, the things that they did to you. And how you felt about it. And then light it on fire. Put it in the shredder. Tear it to shreds. Whatever it needs to be, don't send it. But at some level, admit that you were hurt. Tell the person what you would wanted to have told them if you could in that moment. And then let it go. How do you know when you've forgiven somebody? It may happen when you say it. You know, you can obviously say it in a relationship if you have that peace of mind. But more than anything, what's going to happen with true forgiveness is you're going to start to have a peace of mind again. You're going to start to have some sort of internal acceptance of the past. More than anything, when we're working with guys who have come from challenging backgrounds, the one thing that we tell them is that you cannot move forward without accepting where you come from. Let me say that again. You cannot go forward without accepting and internalizing the path that's led you to this point. A lot of people that get into these particular situations, they want to think back and say to themselves, I wish I hadn't done this and I wish I hadn't done that. Regret's a natural part of life, but to disavow the path, to disavow the reality that you did come from that environment, that you in fact were that person, is to deny the reality of who you are today, because those two things have to coexist. One can't exist without the other. But forgiveness begins with a sense of peace, a sense of peace inside of ourselves. With our feelings and our thoughts are centered on moving forward and not the past, or not what could have been, or not what should have been, but more about what might be or what can be. As we begin to break free of the gravity of those situations, we'll begin to have a freeing effect on our bodies and a lightening effect in the way that will allow us to feel different in the world. We won't walk around with that shadow. We won't walk around with that cloud over our head. We won't define ourselves as that person anymore. You know, a lot of people begin to define themselves by their illnesses. I am this or I am that. And as they begin to do that, I think they lose that part of their lives. More and more they begin to define themselves by the medications they take, or by the situations that they're in, or by the illnesses or the pains that they suffer. I mean, if you listen to older people talk, what are the major things that they talk about? They talk about the pain that they're suffering. They talk about the things that are bothering them. They talk about the people that they know that are dying. All these things become definitions. They all become the definition of who they are. And forgiveness is a letting go. And it goes back to that idea, which is the basis of the conscious communication, is to walk the timeline in real time, in present moment time. To be here. And now, with no past or no future thoughts in your head denying you the experience of exactly what it is you're doing in this moment. To take your life seriously moment by moment. And when it's gone, it's gone. Have you ever thought of something you could have said to somebody? Like 5 minutes after they say something to you, God, I wish I'd have said this to that guy. Or I wish I'd have said that. Or I wish that it, there's actually that, what's the thing in the newspaper? It's the misconnection section. Have you ever seen that? Where it's like in the dating section. And they have like, I saw, you know, you and I was in a, you know, blue Camaro. You were in a red Corvette. Our eyes met at 3rd and Chestnut Street. I'd like to talk again. Call me if you see this. It's kind of like, man, you know, that there was a moment, and somehow you missed that moment, and there's an attempt to get that moment back. And I think it just strikes me as the most unrealistic idea that you could possibly have. If any of you out there have met your long-lost or permanent love from a situation like that, more power to you. But in my mind, it's like denying the possibility of something more. By being locked onto something less, which is that which has already happened, that which is already gone, that which we cannot do anything about. As a second grader, being abused for 2 years, there was absolutely nothing you could do about that. As a teenager, your mind will begin to trick you into the idea, I could have done something, I could have kicked him in the nuts, I could have run home, I could have told mommy, I could have done, there was nothing you could have done. You did exactly what you could have done in that moment. And that's it. And forgiveness begins by understanding that we react in our best interest most of the time, and a lot of the time, that's not the best we could be or the best we could hope for. What if the person you're forgiving doesn't change? Who cares? What we're forgiving them for is to have an impact on our lives, not to have an impact on theirs. If they don't change, if they want to continue to be the curmudgeon or the bad person or the what or the this or the that, well then let them be it. What difference does it make? What we're looking for is to lighten our load. What we're looking for is the opportunity to walk more upright, to walk more comfortably, to walk with a lighter load on the path that we're currently on, and forgiveness is the beginning of that process. Who cares if they change? The internal locus of control, the idea that we, in fact, affect our life, our feelings, our emotions, everything about us, that's the point of what we're here to discuss. Nobody outside of us can have an impact on us if we are fully and completely integrated in our own idea of who we are, what we need, and where we're going. We let go of the toxic people. We don't allow them to have the kind of hold on us that they used to have. We let go of the resentment. Most of anything, we let go of the resentment against ourselves. People talk oftentimes about women in prison and how they fight. Guys in prison, when they get into a fight and the guards find out about it and all of a sudden the bells go off and lockdown, blah, 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 the guys will they'll scatter. They'll run for the exits. Women, apparently, in a prison situation, when they get into a fight, will not let each other go. They will stay locked in that battle, no matter how many guards or how many people come to separate that battle. And a lot of times it's been explained to me that these are almost borderline personalities that were the defense mechanisms created out of early childhood abuse. Imagine, if you will, you're a young child, say that girl that was being abused in second grade, and because of her ability to disassociate, she separates herself from her body and in her mind says, that's happening to my body, that's not happening to me. This is me, the thinking part of her mind. And in some ways, that begins a borderline personality. And later in life, that borderline personality becomes the defender self. The defender self that would have kicked the ass of that guy if they could have, would have been the one that would have protected you from the man who abused you, would have been the one who would have protected you against this or that other challenge or whatever. That protective self is what is fighting in those moments. That overwhelming sense of resentment and anger and hatred and the inability to let go of painful wounds that have happened in the past. There is no guarantee that the people around you will change. There is no guarantee that the people that you love are going to accept the changes that you want to make. It's not important that they do, because ultimately this journey, this existence, this experience, the majority of which takes place between your ears, is what you have control over. And if you want things to change, you have to begin by letting go of those common, everyday resentments and angers and frustrations that we've held on to for so long that have defined who we are. Maybe it's your anger or hatred toward the Democrats or the Republicans. I hate Republicans. I hate Democrats. Maybe it's an anger or resentment towards a particular group of people. Maybe it's an anger or resentment towards a particular gender. All men are like this, all women are pigs. Maybe it's an anger or a resentment towards some other group of people. But in order for us to achieve that which we're looking for, which is to walk our path upright, silently, passionately through the world, we have to find those things inside of ourselves and one by one let them go. Do an inventory of the things that are holding you back and one by one let them go. I can't thank you enough for joining me for another hour of the Conscious Communicator. Next week, Sonia Bennett will be joining us, and we'll be talking about the holographic nature of the world around us. And remember, the rest is still unwritten. It's up to you how you want the next chapter to read. Thank you, Don.
Hi, my name is Rusty May, and I'm the host of The Conscious Communicator, a show dedicated to helping people find their true voice, the nonviolent voice of personal responsibility and purpose, the voice that only they can speak. The reason that most of us fail to achieve our true voice is because of the false voices that occupy the mind, the voices of ego, consumption, expectation, opinion, and self-doubt rob us of our true nature, our true voice. Join me each week for a chat about inner purpose, outer passion, and finding your true voice. I'll see you on Sunday.